Today, we have a thought-provoking and potentially controversial topic all about the feministic movements, our hormones, families, and our culture at large. We discuss the pros and cons of feminism, from the gifts it has brought to anti-masculine culture, potential burnout in women, how it maybe has influenced the rates of fertility, and the differences in the masculine and feminine, both in biology and energetically. This is a spicy episode, so without further ado, let's get started. Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes. All right. So today we are kind of taking a slight shift away from pure medical talk and talking about kind of the larger cultural and societal shifts that kind of lead into different health experiences, especially in relation to hormones and reproduction and raising families. So we're going to be talking about feminism and some of the anti-masculine culture that has come around and just how that's kind of shifted and changed throughout the years and how it's kind of created a unique experience that we're kind of experiencing now. And I just want to highlight first and foremost that we're talking about a very complex topic that's very nuanced. We find fascinating, especially how it relates to hormones and reproduction, raising families, like I said. When we discuss health, sometimes it's important to discuss these underlying factors, but there's a lot in play. There's a lot of history and there's a lot of different groups and thoughts and ideas. So just note that this conversation may be triggering for some people. That's not our intention, but we're just going to be sharing in a conversation about this topic. And just so you know, we're not in this episode discussing the full spectrum of different genders, sexual preferences, or family structures, but more focusing on the traditional female and male biology and roles, because there's just so many nuances and everything when we get into that. So just know that before you continue listening.
Yes. And I mean, I think everybody should be able to understand that there is historical context for male and female, like biological male and female differences because of our roles in the family creation, right? And yeah, our abilities and our unique gifts and contributions. And so it's like this, there's a lot there for the context. Of course, the way that this intersects with modern day societies and, you know, gender identities and different things, it's just not possible to talk about every single situation. And there's so much nuance, like you said. And so anyway, we're just going to go forward with this and just know that it's not like we're anti anything. We're just talking about how this relates to this intersection of modern family building and modern fertility, being, you know, you being a fertility specialist and me being like your babies are already here specialist side of things. Like, we see how these issues can come into play because women mm-hmm. cannot possibly do all of the things. And right now we're right. sort of being asked to be doing all the things, or it's sort of expected because we can. And I don't know, there's like a lot there. And
yeah, I mean, it's sort of like if you look at, you know, me in practice seeing patients, sometimes I reflect, you know, you and I both love the philosophical conversations and we can talk about this stuff all day long, but sometimes we sit and reflect, like, how did we get here? Like, why is it like this? Like, why are women having, you know, all these hormonal issues and men have all this low testosterone and, you know, the family unit is really stressed out? Like, how did we get here? And when you ask those questions, a lot of it does come back to history and to cultural shifts and ideologies and all of these different things that have intersected and come to this meeting point, you know, and we'll continue to as it evolves over time. And so we just kind of wanted to bring up this conversation as something interesting and also at the end kind of talk about our dream utopia scenario of like what we could be doing in society and what we could be bringing more awareness to maybe create more of a balance so that both men and women and families thrive. Is that that's our main goal.
Right, exactly. And it's not like these movements have come about with no benefit. There is benefit, right. But I feel like sometimes well, not like you're saying that, but I'm just saying that it's like sometimes we think if we will see a problem in society and then the solution is to swing it to like the far opposite end 180. And it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I feel like that's how it goes initially. Things swing completely off kilter and become very extreme. I mean, gosh, right now it's just like everything is so extremist. And
yeah, it's so extremist.
And then like as time goes on, people have to realize with their own opinions and kind of also accepting that some of these larger structures, whether it's like law-based or whatever, are not going to usually reflect the nuance and the gray area that most people want or most people agree with. Because I would say there's not that many people that agree with 100% of these far extremes. It's like we sort of want to be somewhere in the middle. And that's how we end up coming adapting and be like, wow, well, it's great that women have rights. Obviously, it's right. great that women can vote. It's great that women can do these things. And then it kind of comes back and it's like, whoa, wait a minute. Is this most beneficial? And I just have to say, I remember being in school, like when we were in naturopathic medical school, and looking around, and most of the people there were like late 20s, early 30s, and it was mostly women, and we're all like, okay, how do we do this and also build our families? Like, how do we simultaneously, you know, achieve a dream and go through this higher education and all of this work here, and then also be able to be the mothers that we want to be? And it was just so interesting. I mean, and many of us chose to do it while in school, and that was not a smart choice on my part. But I didn't know, but it was like, what else were we supposed to be doing? You know, and I remember the school too. Yeah. Like we had an inordinately high number of babies born in the first couple of years of our experience at Bastyr. And the school was so small. It was like, there was a joke, you know, there's something in the water or whatever, but it was like, no, well, look around. Who's the demographic? These are all this perfect reproductive age type person who wants to have a baby, and they're going to have to do it at the cost of other things. And it's like, how do we manage all this? So, okay. Anyway, I just wanted to say that. Let's jump in. You have a really cool outline here. Let's start talking about it.
No worries. So before we get into feminism and the movements of feminism and sort of how that's gotten us to where we are, I just want to mention a quick overview of, again, we're speaking about strictly masculine and feminine or male and female biology and how we're going to be relating things back to hormones. So with masculine biology, a lot of this is determined by hormones. So in the womb, right, like my little baby boy is growing, and the presence of testosterone is going to determine his male reproductive organs. And testosterone, that main predominant hormone that is many, 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 many hundreds of folds higher in males than females, brings with it different traits, right, that we see traditionally in like the traditional male ways of being. And then female biology, also determined by hormones, the lack of testosterone, and then also estrogen and progesterone, which allow for us to reproduce and have babies, also brings with it different traits like large breasts and female reproductive anatomy. So that is something to just hold in the back of your mind as we talk about these things, because we'll be relating this societal stuff back to our unique biology and how these shifts have maybe impacted that biology a little bit, and how we maybe struggle a little bit because of our unique biology being in this new world. And then also the difference between masculine and feminine energy, which is different than biology. That is different than the hormones that determine reproduction. A masculine energy can be any gender can have masculine energy. And these are the qualities of more structure and form. And when we think about masculine, we often think about, I mean, I always think about work, right? Work with a calendar, and there's deadlines and structure and, you know, lack of flow. It's just very organized. It's very, I don't know.
Kind how of to strict. Do. Yeah. Like masculine energy.
It's rigid. It's yes, a rigid form. Yes. And imagine, you know, like a dancer, when we talk about dancers, when there's two partners dancing, there's a masculine partner and then there's a feminine partner. And the feminine is all about flow and creation and never ending. And it's the person that just like wants to talk for the sake of talking. It's nature, it's growth. It never dies. There's so much fluidity to it. And it's this essence that is just the opposite of the masculine, and neither are right or wrong. They're both good and both needed. So in the dancing partner, the masculine is who holds the structure while the female or the feminine twirls around, right? And in society, we need both. They're both very important. For reproduction, females or feminine energy is a little bit more needed than masculine. For the workplace, masculine energy is a little bit more needed, even though they both intersect and are needed in both places. So I just want to highlight that as we talk about masculine and feminine energy. And if you want to learn more about what I'm talking about, I teach about this in my course, The Energetics of Fertility. So if you guys want to dive deeper into what we're talking about and the nuances of that, but I just wanted to highlight the difference, because when we talk about male and female biology and masculine and feminine energy, just know that they're different. Like a female biology person could be a very masculine energy. So just
yes, and we want to highlight that. Like every person has both masculine and feminine qualities to them in different proportions. You know, you meet people, like I've always thought this about you, that you are an extremely feminine woman. And I've never really thought about myself as being that feminine. And I know you, or maybe it wasn't you, I don't know, somebody, one of our friends has been like, what? Like they just
No, I think you're super feminine.
What? See, like that is so funny. Why?
Because you're so in flow and you're so creative and you're so like, but like you sit and talk forever and it's just like, you know, a masculine person is like the person that shows up exactly on time. Everything's strict in schedule. Like, you know, they're just, they're very productive. Like everything is like done. There's no room for wiggle room. Like you're very feminine. And that's why you're so good at making babies, because you're just by nature so feminine and you're so nurturing. And it's so, you know, you can hold multiple things at the same time. You just, you want to like, imagine just like a flittering butterfly. That's feminine. You're a butterfly.
So it's more than, I guess, and I knew this, but I guess in my mind, still my first, probably from societal conditioning, my first like associations with the word feminine are like curvy and very girly.
That's biology.
Right. Well,
that is biology.
Even just like girly though, like dresses and makeup and things. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think of you. Like you have this like curvy, cute little body and like you dress really cute and like your makeup is really good and your hair is always pretty. And you know what I mean?
That's part of it, because the feminine likes to be seen. So the masculine likes to be in the background. They like to be the protector. They like to be the structure. The feminine loves to be seen. That's why dancing is inherently more of a feminine practice, because they love to be seen for the sake of being seen. And this is why when we think of traditional, like more feminine, quote unquote, women, they're maybe more dressed up or they like to put on makeup or whatever. A lot of it has nothing to do with that they have low self-esteem or that they like don't feel pretty. A lot of it is that it's inherent in their essence to want to be seen. They love to be seen. Whereas like I think of Mike, cause he's so masculine and like, he just like wants to be in the background, you know, he doesn't want anyone to like be like seeing him.
Yeah.
But there's feminine men too, right? The feminine men that love to be seen. They love to be in theater. They love to like dress nice. And you know, it doesn't mean female or male. It's just, that's an element about it, but there's different aspects. Not everybody has all aspects to you, but you can learn. Most people are born with a little bit more and less of one of those essences. But then there's things like society that shift us. And then there's things like our work or motherhood. Like maybe a more masculine female becomes a mother and is being pulled more into like a feminine energy, even though that might not be her nature. And she might be the person who struggles more with motherhood.
100%. I think that
she thrives better being the CEO at the office.
Well, and we've talked about this before. I feel like really, really high achieving women have a hard time with motherhood because
they're more masculine essence.
Yes. Like we've probably kind of honed our masculine edge for so many years, getting through higher education or starting businesses or whatever. And all of that is extremely inherently masculine. And we're just kind of rah, rah, rah. We're really good at it. And we sort of maybe lean into that side of ourselves more. And then boom, you have a child and it's like, you can't schedule this little baby and you have to be able to just flow with the day and be intuitive to their needs. And it can feel kind of boring, kind of isolating, but then it's also very overstimulating. Like there's a lot to it that where you just have to go with the flow. And that can be really, really challenging. That for me, I remember with my first child, I remember literally coming home. This was a conversation I had with my therapist often was I had this one pregnancy, but of school where I had a clinic shift that got off at like 5 p.m. And so I would sit in my car outside of, at the time we were living in the tiny house, I would sit in my car outside of the tiny house and take like 10 really slow deep breaths and be like, you are going to become a mom now. Because I had to like walk into that house and be a mom to my like 9-month-old son. And I had just been in this really highly kind of masculine environment of school, plus medicine is very masculine, plus education is very masculine. And like being dictated by the, you know, the overseeing doctors and all these different things. And then it was such a weird affront for me. I would come in and I would have this like really big energy, and I'd start like randomly cleaning up the house and telling my husband, like, what are we doing? And what are you doing in the next hour? And he was the primary caregiver at that time for those last 4 hours or whatever it was. And so he mm-hmm. was actually probably more in his feminine
yep.
To take care of our son and to be, you know, the parenting role there. And it would bother me though, because it would like, it wasn't our normal natural states of being. And I would mm-hmm. be like, I would almost want to be like, what's wrong with you? Like, perk up, talk mm-hmm. to me faster. Like, tell me, debrief me. What's the day been like? Da, 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 da. And I had to just be like, ooh, chill out about it. You know what I mean? But that's mm-hmm. just like a micro experience to the way that all of this stuff matters. So I know we're kind of like going off the rails here, but I just.
Yeah, no, but that's a great. Yeah, it's a great segue into where I want to go next, because the fact that you even are in a masculine environment and have to go home and mentally shift back into the feminine, where did that even begin? And it all began with the feminist movement, because before the mid-1800s, so just a quick history of feminism, there's basically four, I mean, I'm sure people would argue with me on this because everyone likes to argue about everything, but somewhat about four waves of feminism, right? So the first wave was like the mid-1800s, when women were basically trying to establish the fact that we are equal, yet nothing actually was reflective of that in society. So women fought for like 70 years for the right even to just vote. It wasn't until the 1920s that the 19th Amendment was passed and women were able to vote. But the movement to try to make us feel like we're, you know, equal in society started in the mid-1800s. So that was sort of the first wave of feminism. And then some people count the Margaret Sanger birth control world into the waves of feminism. She came in around the 1910s, where she was really campaigning to bring contraception and birth control to women. And Margaret has her own dark kind of twisted history with the eugenics movement. And, you know, we're not here to talk about that. But basically, you know, she was trying to advocate for women who didn't want to have, you know, pregnancies back to back. But it wasn't until the 1950s when the research allowed for the first oral contraceptive pill to be made. So almost an entire 100 years later was the first oral contraceptive pill. And this really allowed the second wave of feminism to come in around the 60s.
Wait. And I have a question really quick. I have a question. Maybe I missed it, but did you say Margaret Sanger was around 1910 or 1810?
1910. So mid-1800s was the first wave of feminism where women were like, we're equal. But okay. No one acknowledged that, right? So black men got the right to vote before women. Right. And there was like a whole thing there. And then there, as the women's suffrage movement, which was the, you know, act of wanting to try to get to vote, that was about 70 years of them fighting for that, right, until 1920. 10 years before the women's right to vote was when Margaret Sanger came on board around 1910. And she was like, women should be able to like choose when they want to have babies. We should have contraception. But it was illegal. Like contraception was illegal. She was very much fighting against a really big system that did not want women to have reproductive control. And there weren't even really many options then.
And then it was in the 1950s where the birth control. So I thought you'd said 100 years later, but it was like 40 years later.
Well, so 1950 was when birth control happened, meaning the first wave of feminism was 100 years before birth control came on land. It's okay. I didn't explain that very well. That's great. So yeah, so 1950s, the oral birth control was created, and they created that before they even really understood much about hormones. So it's not like back then women could have just been cycle tracking. Like they didn't even know how estrogen and progesterone worked. They were just learning to understand a little bit about it. And so the oral contraception came in the 50s. And then the 60s is kind of when second wave feminism came. And this was what a lot of people traditionally think of as feminism, where it's like the whole classic burning bras, which I don't think anyone actually burned bras, but like women were like, we don't want to be in the home anymore. We want to work in the workplace. We're equal to men. We want to wear pantsuits. We don't want to be mothers and wives. You know, this is when the 1960s and 70s was when a lot of homes were built in the United States and the kitchens were teeny tiny because women didn't want to be home cooking. They wanted to be out in the workplace.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's the worst decade that they could have exploded house buildings by their tiny kitchens.
Wow, that's really interesting. Yeah. And that was part of the sexual freedom, right? Like, you don't necessarily need to be monogamous. And
And like the 60s had their own thing. So this was when they were, you know, protesting the Vietnam War and the civil rights movement was happening. So there were a lot of social stuff going on. And so the second wave feminism was right up there, basically like women are equal to men. And this was sort of when more anti-masculine culture came in. You know, the first wave feminism was sort of like, we're equal too. The second wave feminism was like, men suck, women are better. You know, like this, they're just, it created this whole kind of classic feminism that we think of these like extreme ideas. But, you know, there was a lot of good that came out of it. And we'll talk about the good and the not so good that came out of feminism. But, you know, this is where the Equal Pay Act was passed. Roe v. Wade happened, which people have different thoughts and feelings about that. But in general, there was just a lot of movement forward.
And then where women were being able to be recognized as like full citizens, able to make decisions on their own bodies and, you know, have the rights in that kind of a way.
And when we talk about extremism, sometimes it does take extreme measures to get things to change. You know, if we're just like really polite and being like, hi, can I vote? I would really like to vote. You know, like it probably wouldn't have happened. Like sometimes to make something radically shift, you need a radical thing. But the problem is that radicalness needs to come back to like median. Otherwise, it creates disharmony, right? Just like in anything with nature, if you push too far in one direction, it's going to like upheave the other side, which is what we see with men, which we'll get to. So just to like summarize, and there's a lot of people in like the Black community that have an issue with the whole like white feminism movements. So there were a whole like Black women feminism movements along the same lines. Like there was a lot going on.
Splinter off of all sorts of different types of groups.
Just everyone was upset. They're like, we all need to be heard. And so then the 1990s kind of brought in third wave feminism. So this was where there was more awareness around sexual harassment in the workplace, lack of women in power. You know, this was when all of the like girl bands like Beyonce and Destiny's Child and, you know, like all of these like girl bands talking about like women power. Like this was very much the 90s. There was a lot of sexual expression and individuality that came then. And this was also a time when some women were starting to reject second wave feminism because the second wave feminists were more of the like, we want to be men, you know? But then the third wave feminists were like, no, we want to be women. Like, we're proud of being women. We want to dress like women. Like, look at our luxurious, you know, boobs and all this stuff. So there were like a splintering of like the feministic movement where they were both fighting for women, but for different reasons. And then this kind of led us into fourth wave feminism, which people disagree on like exactly when, but sort of like with the Me Too movement in like the 2000s and just bringing more awareness to how women are still being, you know, harassed and marginalized and all of this. And now there's like a lot of interesting movements where, you know, there's the transgenderism movement and then there's some who are swinging back to the complete opposite where they're like, women need to be back in the home and not work and do all this stuff. And so there's now all these splinterings of lots of different groups. But to wrap it back all up together, these feministic movements, for whatever they were, brought pros and cons and have really led us to where we are now. And in a way, the feministic movement was sort of the fight for women to shift from more feminine to masculine energy in a way. And it brought the right to vote, to have jobs and titles, we could start businesses, we had economic autonomy. Like, you know, 200 years ago, if a woman wasn't married to a man, like she probably couldn't survive or she'd be a spinster, or she would be shunned by society. And, you know, that doesn't exist anymore. You can be a single woman, a single mom. We had the ability to prevent pregnancy if we wanted, reproductive freedom. So it brought a lot of things that I would say even the women who now are like anti-feminism are still benefiting from today. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, and I have to say too, that the anti-feminism, I'm like, what does it mean to be a feminist? What does it mean to be anti-feminist? Because I think every single person literally has a different definition of both of these things.
Totally. 100%. Which they fight within themselves, just like the third wave feminists don't like the second wave feminism. Yeah, but it's all very nuanced.
It's so nuanced. It's like, you guys, this word literally almost doesn't even have a definition. There's no way that we can talk about it. Like, we just can't even talk about it. And maybe that was part of the, you know, some people would say, well, that was part of the patriarchal kind of like underpinnings movement too, so that it's like, we don't even have a definition for this word. We don't even know what it means. We can't talk about it. It's like, okay, well, yes, for sure. In terms of like the patriarchy, when people are like, what does that mean? I don't understand it. It's like, you can't try to like pretend that given everything you just explained, that men were not top for all of history until recently, you know, in a different kind of a way. And it, in one breath, I can see, well, it's like, okay, they were the law rule makers and we were subordinate because of that kind of like ruling energy. And it's like, I can see how that would make sense. Not that it's okay, but I can see how it fell into place and that makes sense. Also, because we have a huge portion of our energy put towards childbirth and rearing, we're not going to be the ones that are out at war and like making these judicial decisions and, you know, protecting countries and doing different things. We're just not those people. We were never in that room doing that because we were the ones that were making sure the society had more people born. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
well,
it makes sense. It makes sense. Like, you can't, when people are like so like mad at men, like today's men about that kind of a thing, I'm just like, no, you guys, this, can we not like both and, you know what I mean? It's like, that's not, it's not your husband or like your friend's cousin or whoever who was doing this and who is a part of this. Yes. Is there something to be recognized there? Sure. And like, is there little, it's like microaggressions, you know, for like in like a racist way. It's like these little teeny tiny things, like a little glance here or a comment, or, you know, microaggressions are real and they add up and they do cause health effects and also just like, you know, mental, emotional anguish and everything like that too. But it's like, there is still those types of underpinnings in today's society with men in general in a lot of ways. And like, one of the ways that was highlighted really well was with the Me Too movement, because I think people did not realize how big of a deal that was and how almost everyone, you know, almost every woman and friend that you have, that you look around, has had something happen uncomfortable sexually with a man who has taken advantage of them in some kind of way. And it's like, that was really, really eye-opening, I think, to say. And just like the idea, you know, that like women walk in a parking lot at night with their keys between their knuckles. Like, do men do that? Do men even think about that? Like, no. And so there is problems here. You know, the patriarchy is a thing. It does have, but now like what we're going to talk about too, is like, we've swung to this whole side where it's like, men are villainized. All men are evil. They're all bad. We don't need them. Screw them. Get rid of them. It's like, whoa, what?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I think that's why this conversation is so fascinating to me, because a big reason why males have traditionally been in charge in society for so long is not just because they're evil and women are dumb and like, you know, submissive. They're not. A lot of it has to do with our biology. Because,
and
like,
that's the
whole
point of this conversation. Yeah.
Exactly. When we go back to males who are males because of the hormone testosterone, that creates traits that have more authority and more aggression and more leadership type qualities and more protective type qualities. The problem is not testosterone. The problem is not masculine men. The problem is bad people who happen to be in a male biology form, who have taken advantage or female and taken over. It's like, the biology inherently isn't bad. Men are not evil. The masculine is not evil. It is people who have power hungry, control driven, whatever. And yes, like you said, like traditionally the biology of females has been more on the feminine, more on the child rearing, and without the ability of birth control, had really little say in that, you know, especially when, you know, you aren't as big or strong as many of the male counterparts, where you couldn't even necessarily prevent things like sex and reproduction from happening. So when we look back on society, it's like so interesting to even like talk about the patriarchy. And it's funny when you look at people in modern day and like self-proclaimed feminists and people who are so anti-men and like this whole thing, when you really zoom out and kind of look at it, it's not that females and males are the ones that should be fighting each other. And that's the whole point of what I want to get in this conversation, is I believe we can live in harmony where both are thriving. It's that certain people and certain ways of being and things in history haven't been ideal, but it doesn't necessarily mean inherently that the feminine is bad and that we need to not be feminine and that we need to not be nurturers or mothers. you know, that was kind of what the second wave feminism thought, or that masculine is bad and that men are bad or that people who are leaders are bad or any of this stuff. It's like, they're not bad. It's finding the divine in both versus the toxic in both. And that, I think, is a concept that people don't necessarily recognize and isn't brought into the conversation. And so one of the cons that came from the feminist movement, in my opinion, has been this anti-man, anti-masculine culture. And I think that's really sad because it's led men to being really confused and afraid to be masculine, which a divine masculine, a healthy form of masculine, is inherently their nature, you know, in certain ways, in certain men. And so it's almost like they are now being told they're wrong for being who they inherently are, or who they feel like they are.
Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. Men are often forgotten about or neglected when it comes to fertility, which is insane given the fact that they contribute 50% to making a baby. Male factor also accounts for almost 50% of infertility cases. So why aren't we talking about and supporting men more? At Needed, they are. Because our infertility was male factor, this is super near and dear to my heart, and I'm so proud of the products that I helped formulate with Needed specifically for men. One of my favorite products is their Sperm Support Plus, which is an amazing blend of herbs and nutrients to support optimal testosterone and sperm production, antioxidants to support sperm quality, and probiotics for an optimal microbiome, which supports health in general. This blend is not only good for fertility, but for men's health, because what is good for fertility is good for everything else, from mood to libido to energy. It was designed to be taken in combo with Needed's Men's Multi, their omega-3s, and their CoQ10. Visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Again, visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. Okay, back to the show.
And we need it too. I saw this video a long time ago. If I can try to find it, I'll put it in the show notes. But it was basically this compilation of all these jobs that men do that you wouldn't ever want to have. Mm-hmm. Of like the just, you know, this societal structural building jobs, construction, sewage, power lines, heavy lifting, dangerous things, making things, building things, stuff to do with protection, military jobs, protection, police officers. All of this stuff, different stuff. It's like, and I had just never really like thought about it in that way until I saw the video. I was like, dang, that is like really, that's so true. And it's so interesting. And yes, when a man is in a masculine state, if let's just pretend that, you know, it's a male person who is also very masculine, which doesn't mm-hmm. have to be that way, but let's just say it's not toxic in and of itself. What there is a different term for that, that is toxic masculinity, or you could just say a toxic person in general. But yes, it's like where that edge of being the more of like the aggressor, it doesn't have to be like violent. Aggression does not mean violence. It can, I guess, if it's toxic, but the being the aggressor, being the person who's going to make the choice and the decision to kind of like dictate and to take over in a good way, though, it can be like the one who's going to make action. Masculine energy in the traditional Chinese medicine is yang or yang, and feminine energy is yin. But the yang energy is like action. It's doing. It's making things happen. It's like, not that a whole world full of women wouldn't do that, or like, you know, feminine people, it could just be feminine men and women. It's not that like nothing would get done, but it's just a different balance that obviously we need the way, this is the way that our bodies are set. Like, here's an example really quick. I want to talk about testosterone you were mentioning. I think it's a 4 months gestation where a male penis gets a brainwash of testosterone over their brain. It's like a big kind of flood over of testosterone. And they think, I mean, who knows? We don't know everything about embryology, but they think that that pinnacle point at about 4 months of gestation is where the male brain is set up to be completely different from a female brain forever in their life. And when they've tested, like when they've done these really big longitudinal studies and done studies with behavioral changes, like where a male-brained person will wake in the night to the sound of like thudding, like footsteps, and sounds that get progressively louder and louder and louder. But they do not statistically on the same kind of plane wake up to the sound of like animals or babies crying. A feminine brain who in the absence of testosterone, really that's all it is, right? I mean, and there's, you know, X chromosomes or whatever, blah, blah, blah. But it's what they think though, the whole point of the study, and if I can find it, I will send it to you. I found this in college, so it's been a long time. I can't find it. the absence of that testosterone wash made that brain much more susceptible to waking up to the high-pitched sounds of whining, crying, and whether that's animal or human, it didn't matter, but not the sound of progressive footsteps getting closer and closer to the bed. Isn't that interesting? And it's like, okay, that's like, that highlights exactly perfectly the idea of the sort of protection inherent quality versus the nurturing inherent quality. Again, not to say that all men are protective and all women have to be nurturing. That's not what we're saying. It's the masculine and the feminine. It could be a very feminine, you know, whatever. My point, though, is just that, like, it does have a bit of a biological root, and that is just one of the places where it takes place. And so then when we look at a structure like society, there's going to be more men who have this testosterone wash over their brain, male-bodied people, men, who are going to choose these types of jobs that orient them to fulfilling this deep inherent need and wish and want of protection and building and contributing and providing. And female-bodied people or women, or, you know, feminine, will choose the more nurturing, the teachers, the school counselors, the nurses, the doctors, maybe save from the educational standpoint. I think that it's not that women can't be doctors. There are more male doctors. That's because to go and become a doctor and to do all of the medical school and the residency, you're biting into your reproductive years. And so that is literally why to become a nurse and take only a few more years is much more likely. And I think that that is why there's more female nurses than male nurses. Literally, like, the men have the time to be able to put towards going that next step to become a doctor. So anyway, those are the nurturing roles that we're going to see people in inherently, and that's okay. And it doesn't mean, you know, if somebody wants to go and do the opposite, the crisscross, fine, cool, whatever. But what I think you're saying, correct me if I'm wrong, is that there, because of these different waves of movement and societal kind of like cultural changes and shifts, that it's almost like we've kind of thought and we've raised little girls in these like really hardcore STEM courses and, you know, science, technology, engineering, math, like STEM, S-T-E-M, pushing them to be like, you can be an engineer. You don't need a man to provide for you. You don't need anybody. You can just go do it all by yourself. You can be one little homeostasis just by yourself. You don't have anybody. And it's like, whoa, okay. I mean, in some way that's empowering. That's how I was raised. That's probably how you were raised. My parents told me all the time, you don't want to have a job, Morgan, that you're going to have to rely on a man. That was my whole thing. Same. And I get, you know, our parents were trying to protect us so that we didn't get into a situation where we maybe were left with children if our partners left us or something. And what were we going to do? And I get that. And I have that same, you know, I can understand now as a mom of little girls and you as well. It's like, yeah, I don't want them to be in that kind of a situation. And it was like, oh my gosh. Okay. So it was like, I was going to be a veterinarian. I mean, my whole life. Right. And then it turned into human medicine. You always knew you wanted to be human medicine in that kind of a stance, but it's like, it kind of like maybe got a little off kilter, and this is where we're trying to like bring it back, or at least just highlight how these things can have biological impact and maybe why this is contributing. This is one slice of the pie, one of the cogs in the wheel that contributes to this really big problem of infertility we have now in modern day. You know, of course there's microplastics and endocrine disruptors and crappy food and stress and whatever, but like a huge portion of this potentially also is the way that we are trying to force ourselves to live in this type of energy that is not in the receiving and nurturing, like the way that a female bodied, you know, more in that feminine to then become the nurturer and stay the nurturer. Yeah.
Right. And so you said that so perfectly. And what I want to highlight with all of this is the feministic movements gave us gifts and they weren't perfect. What they did was it was all about women. Understandably so. Again, if we look back on history, we had a long way to swing to come back into society of like being treated as equal, right? Like where we could become doctors, we could become business owners. So they gave us gifts. Yet what I think they did wrong, or what society did wrong, and what I would love to see for the future is that it's not just about empowering women. It's about empowering men and women, because we empowered women. You can be anything. You can do anything. You don't need a man. Men are toxic. Men suck. Men rape everybody. Men are shit. You know, it's like, instead of saying, you know what, woman, you, like, if I had my daughter and my son, both of them together, to tell my daughter, you are amazing. You can be whoever you want to be. You can be anybody that you want to be. And you know what? If you choose to want to be a mom and stay home, I'm just as proud of you as if you want to become a doctor.
Yeah, great.
And to tell my son, you know, I am so proud of you. You don't have to hide your feelings or your emotions. But if you feel like you want to go, you know, beat a stick on the ground because that's what inherently is in you because you have testosterone, that's okay. But you know what? You're going to be raised to learn how to respect women. And, you know, we're going to exist in this society where you're also empowered and taught how to be a divine masculine. The men were completely neglected out of this empowerment conversation. And so what it's created is an environment full of women who are like empowered in certain ways, but we never taught the men how to be good men. And so now there's these women waking up to this idea that like maybe they actually do want families. Maybe some of them, although they were told since they were a little girl, they could go to school and do all the things, they realize maybe they do want to be a mom or they want to stay home, yet they don't have a counterpart masculine, divine masculine to hold space for them. Because the men were never empowered with that. They weren't taught it. They were just told their inherent masculine nature was bad and wrong. They weren't taught this part of masculinity is toxic. Don't do that. This part of masculinity is empowering. This is how you can protect your family. This is how you can provide if that's what you want to do. How do you coexist with a female counterpart or a male counterpart? Either way, in this divine, beautiful way, how can you guys coexist together to create this strong family structural unit? They were completely left out of the conversation. And so there's all these men that are just confused. They don't know who to be and how to be. And, you know, there's certain extreme groups that have spun from that where they're hyper masculine in the toxic sense. And then there's other groups where they're hyper feminine because they're like, well, I don't get in trouble when I'm feminine, right? I'm more accepted by society when I'm more feminine, like all these women who've been celebrated for the past 50 years. And so there's a confusion in my experience of men, of how to know how to show up and how to be in the world. And it's not only hurting men, but I think it's hurting women.
Yeah. Well, they were, like you said, like they were just being hated on for such a period of time without the like, it was, you're right. It's like, it was just one side of the conversation, which is, hey, men have hurt us in these various ways, which is all legit and valid. Mm-hmm. It's like, don't do that. Don't be this kind of person. Don't do that.
Don't be Harry Weinstein or whatever.
Yeah. Harvey Weinstein. Yeah,
or Harvey Weinstein.
Jeffrey Epstein, Harry. Please. Yeah. Like, come on. And then it was just a period and the end of the conversation. Yeah,
but there's no role models for them to look towards. Yeah. It's like, don't be these people. Bye.
Yeah, bye. But it's like, okay, well, who do you want us to be like then? And also yeah. You have to then be accepting and loving of us as we are when we're not being those ways. But it was kind of like it was all lumped in as every man was bad or whatever. But wait, you said something. I just wanted to clarify. I don't know what you meant. You said to your son, if you wanted to be a stick on the ground, what does that mean?
Like be a stick on the ground. Like men, like boys, testosterone, it's like they're inherently more aggressive, right? Testosterone makes you more aggressive. Yes. Like if you want to go like, you know, bang a stick on the ground, like that's fine. I'm not going to be mad at you and be like, I need you to play with dolls, right? Like, you know, it's like accept their masculine nature. If you left a child to be how they want to be without society saying this is good or bad, sometimes males who have more testosterone are going to have feelings like aggression or wanting to physically move.
Oh yeah. I think that is when you have kids, that's undeniable. Like that yeah. is literally, you guys, maybe I'm just living in a household of like the most stereotypical boys and girls in the whole entire world, but like I've also just witnessed it, you know, being a nanny and being steeped in this world. And of course there's always going to be differences and there's always a bell curve where there's going to be boys that are going to play with, you know, and it's not that my son's never played with dolls. He totally has. And he's obsessed with our baby in like the cutest, sweetest way. It doesn't mean that it's so funny. Masculine does not mean that a boy or a male is going to look at anything nurturing and be like, ugh, yeah, gross, I don't want to do that. Like, that's not what it means. It's so funny. But his way of interacting, my son's way of interacting with the world is a physical one.
Yeah.
My girl's way of interacting with the world so far is a emotional and mental and social one. They look to me we talk about things before their bodies even move. If they don't know what something is, they'll literally like point to it and they'll come over to me and they'll be like, Mama, what is that? And we'll talk about it. But when Gage was like four, something he'd never seen before, he would literally pick it up and like smash, twist, throw, grab it, like squeeze it, try to break it almost like in 4 seconds before anything even came over his brain. And it was just the way that he would interact with things was in a physical plane. Mm-hmm. It wasn't as, and again, not all little boys and girls are like this. please do not think we are trying to say that everybody is like this, but right. you also can't deny what you witness in your mm-hmm. life experience. You also cannot deny what you witness out in society and in the world there. And again, this all comes back to hormones. It's likely due to testosterone and the way that mm-hmm. that interplays with our biology and how it affects our behavior. And it's okay. It's not a bad thing, but yes, like you're saying, we need to be giving the men sort of like more of a role model or masculine people, whoever they are, men or female or whatever in their body, but giving them more of a role model of how to show up in that kind of a way. So that
in a healthy way.
Yeah. In a healthy way. And mm-hmm. that is balanced and good. But right now, and just to bring this into the world of testosterone and how we're seeing plummeting testosterone rates, mm-hmm. how interesting could it be? I don't know if this is like a proven fact, but I think that this is one of the points of this conversation too, is just that what if some of this societal shift is contributing to the way that our men are not allowed to be in this, because they're not allowed to show up in a masculine way, because right now the kind of general tenet and overall, although I do think it's shifting for the better already, is just that like, that's bad. But it's funny mm-hmm. because it's like, but the women want the masculine. The women are like, no, 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 we want to be the masculine ones and you can't be the masculine ones. But we mm-hmm. also, if we're heterosexual, we don't want our men to be like the girls. It's like, well, what yeah. do you want them to do then?
And well, also, that's exactly what yeah. this conversation is about, because it's like what we created was this fear of men being masculine. And so it's created an empty space that women are filling. Some of them want that, you know, like some resonate more with that second wave feminism where they're like, yeah, I want to be a CEO. I don't want to stay home with my kids all day. I like being in the masculine role, but because of these societal shifts, our economics have changed. Whereas a lot of family households rely now on two incomes from the female and the male. And with this shift,
whoever they are, yeah.
Yeah, or two partners. But with this shift of the female or the feminine, let's say, like, no, I'm talking about a female, a biological female who can reproduce, who can bear and birth children, now has to shift into more of a masculine role, whether they want to or not. And this is where I think a breakdown in society comes in, is if their partner isn't holding enough of that masculine role, either because they don't know how or because their hormones are literally less, either from these energetic shifts or from environmental shifts. You know, the testosterone is plummeting 100%. It's affecting fertility. It's affecting men's motivation. It's affecting all sorts of things. Then women are kind of in this position in certain households and certain circumstances where they're kind of holding both. They are the female biology, where they are literally ones getting pregnant, bearing children, breastfeeding, but also playing this more masculine role of working and being a breadwinner and doing all the things. And this is where it comes down to, biologically speaking, not same-sex marriages or transgenderism or anything, a cis female and male together who were reproducing together, the female in this new modern society, because of the ways of feminism and the lack of like a strong divine masculine in certain circumstances, is led in many ways, many women, to be so depleted because they are playing both of these roles, both physically and energetically. And that is so sad, because I think a lot of women don't want that. You know, they're like, I'm grateful to you women who came before me. I can vote. I can have a job. But like, I'm exhausted because I'm working full time. I'm raising children. I'm breastfeeding. And I'm not being supported in society in that way, because our workplace is set up so much more for the masculine hormonal biology, which is, it resets every day. You have the same amount of productivity every day, because the masculine male biology, the testosterone biology of a male with testosterone, is that their cycle resets every single day. A female biology hormonal system is monthly. And we do not have the same amount of productivity and mental capacity and energy every day throughout our cycle. It changes. We have superpowers within that as women, but because we as females are biologically the ones that reproduce, we have a different hormonal structure that demands different things from us. You know, we have periods. We bleed a whole week out of every month. That's depleting. Yeah. We are the ones pregnant, throwing up, vomiting, giving birth, breastfeeding, giving all of this. Yet because of second wave feminism, we're expected in the workplace in many circumstances to behave and act exactly like our male counterparts.
And give no like graciousness to those differences in productivity. Like it's
because they wanted us to be equal. They're like, oh, you're equal? You're equal. And it's like, but we're not. We're different. We're equal, but we're different.
Yeah. And it's like beyond that too, if we do try to be like, hey, it's different for me on this week, we just get like berated, you know? It's like, oh, only a period. It's like, well, no, it's actually very real. That's such a good point. I forgot about that and how that intersects with the way that people are having to work for this double income. And it's not just because of second wave feminism. I know you're not saying that it is. It's just the way that our economics and everything about modern society has shifted where we do have to work. And a lot of women love their jobs and they mm-hmm. struggle with this because in one breath, they, in their minds, like their jobs, they maybe even want to have a break from the kids too. They want to have more of a balance in their life. Mm-hmm. Maybe partially that's because they see their husbands doing it too, or their partners. And they're sort of like, why am I the one? Because it is, and most people will say this too, in a lot of senses, it's harder being a stay-at-home parent and dealing mm-hmm. with the day in and day out of children and household tasks than it is to go and sit at a job somewhere. And not all the time, of course, but it is like a different gig. And mm-hmm. so sometimes I think that, you know, women, they want that and they need that. But somewhere deep in the biology, though, of this, it is beginning to cause a rift. And I think in women, it often manifests as anxiety and depression, mm-hmm. depletion, burnout,
hormonal rage. Imbalances.
Yeah, all these hormone imbalances. They're having period issues, cycle issues, whatever it is, PMS.
Infertility. I mean, I see this so classic. I mean, you know, this isn't always the case, especially not, but there's a large-ish majority of people, especially who I've helped going through IVF, who are these top CEOs, high functioning, high performing, I need to be pregnant in May so that I can be at the conference, you know, next September, like, you know, this kind of mentality, which is masculine. And, you know, whether it's like their actual hormones have shifted or not, it's like fertility requires a slightly different way of being, you know, of this acceptance. And same with men, like weirdly, as much as the masculine has been demoralized and like berated, men need testosterone to make sperm. So like when we look at the fertility crisis, not only is it environmental, it's very much that, but from an energetic perspective, the women are trying to be men, the men are being pushed to be more like women. And there's this actual biological breakdown that isn't ideal that we aren't really like talking about, you know, from an energetic perspective. And so I don't know. Well,
I think that it's not talked about often too, because people are so afraid to talk about these topics. And I'm sure that there's going to be some people who are, you know, they don't agree with us or whatever. We're mm-hmm. not trying to trigger people. We're not trying to isolate different groups. We're just trying to talk about this one particular dynamic the way that it is. And because obviously it's infinitely more complicated when we are, maybe if there's people who are taking hormone replacement therapy or they're doing different things there's not a, you know, male body and female body person in the couple and they're doing reproductive technologies. Like obviously that's a completely different situation. We're not talking about that. We are in this episode really trying to just highlight how on a mass scale in the majority of the scenario, which is going to be the heterosexual male-female couple, and they're experiencing infertility. This is no surprise to anybody. Men's testosterone rates are dropping. And it's like, I wonder how much of this, just the energetics of all of this is playing a role in that. And at least in a female example that I can share, you know, I know a couple of different people who are very close friends of mine who either notice that they don't get a cycle, they just do not even have a period, unless they are in a relationship where they are having sex. Where these people only have a cycle when they're having sex. And what that highlights to me, or in the situation where their bodies respond and change, and like one woman I know's cup size almost doubled when she was in a relationship. And you know, these are heterosexual people, so with a man or whatever. But my point is that like when these hormonal pathways are activated, obviously sex and being in a sexual relationship is a lot more of a biological pull towards shifting things in your physiology than maybe just like what you're experiencing in society. But I mean, I don't know, because mm-hmm. the stress and what you experience in society, like we know that The microaggressions that Black people experience are one of the huge factors that contribute to their overall increased rate of high blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's accounted and adjusted for all other things, including like health, lifestyle, genetic factors, et cetera, you know, like the different familial, it's not because of the familial different high blood pressures, whatever. It's because of what they're experiencing on a day in and day out situation with the stress and anxiety of that. And I'm not trying to say that like men are being treated anything like that, but to that extent. But I'm just saying that the being told constantly day in and day out that like this way of your biology, which is going to be a testosterone inherent leader, mm-hmm. like that's the lead hormone in this situation, not leader as in like ruler. But if that's being constantly under scrutiny,
mm-hmm.
I wonder, it would be really fascinating. Maybe there are studies like this that can study, do they actually have lower testosterone rates? Yeah. You know what would be interesting is because I feel like masculinity is really celebrated in certain cultures, like in the mm-hmm. farming and agricultural cultures, or in mm-hmm. like military and police officer and da 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 da. Like I wonder if in those, if we could take those populations test, but no, because you wouldn't be able to. Maybe they are in those jobs because they have higher testosterone. So you wouldn't really be able to know, is it chicken or the egg?
I'm sure there's been studies on it. We should look it up. But the same goes for females, right? Like when we're told as little girls from the very beginning that, you know, looking at the traditional females who were like frilly and dresses and like makeup and wanting to stay home and like be with the kids, it was inherently sort of, the underlying theme was like, that's not good. If you yes. want to be a good girl, you go to college and you become some really high, powerful person. And these traits of more of like the traditional feminine essence are not celebrated. That's seen as like dumb or weak or whatever. Even just without it being said explicitly, there's different things that we pick up in our society. And so I 100% I believe that our mental capacity can downregulate our physical hormones, 100%.
Yeah, you're so right. Like I remember thinking, I don't know where I picked this up, society at some point, but that, yeah, if I didn't go to college and if I didn't prove, it was like I needed to prove myself. Like I needed mm-hmm. to be something, because even though the whole time I did want to be a mom as well, always wanted to be a mom, I never really was even given the space to consider, do I want to focus solely on being a mom? And now mm-hmm. here I am, went and did all of the education and am really prioritizing these years to stay at home with my kids. And I love it. And it's, you know, it's hard, of course, but that doesn't make it me want to like go to see patients in a clinic. And luckily I can do that right now with the way that our income is set, but it's hard. It's not easy. It takes a lot of sacrifices because the way that society is, and I am here working, you and I are both, mm-hmm. we're doing our online stuff and we're working so that we can stay around our children. And lucky that we can do that, because that's the other thing, is that it is such a privilege to be able to stay home with your kids and have an income coming from somewhere else that's enough. Because in this mm-hmm. society, it's so freaking hard. There's so many women that do not want to leave their babies mm-hmm. and go work. They don't want to, but they have to. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how is that helping our society when we have people, you know, needing that to take place? Also, there's this like the trad wife trend, which somebody sent me something about it that was – what I see with the trad wife trend is like,
I don't know what that is. You have to tell me.
Oh, trad, like traditional, like playing into the traditional gender roles. And for some people, this is like, it feels so good. And mm-hmm. of course it's like, that makes total sense. If you're in a very stereotypically masculine, feminine dynamic in that way with mm-hmm. you and your partner, and your partner wants to provide and protect, and you want to nourish and raise the children and keep a home and be a homemaker, beautiful. Love it. Mm-hmm. Do it. Like, that's amazing. And then people are feeling really fulfilled in that. And it does leach down into that idea of like, from your biology, this is coming from a root of literally like in your physiology. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's obviously also going to be people who are super happy in their situations where mom is working, dad's staying at home, taking care mm-hmm. of kids, yep. or some blend of both. I would say, I feel like the majority are a blend of both, where both parents mm-hmm. are working to at least some extent. And now we're millennials and beyond, right? It's like they're both taking care of the children too. But that has been something that has shifted only recently, which is like on the podcast that my husband and I did, we'll link in the show notes, which is about how the classic quote unquote gender roles of male and female, of mom and dad, and who's doing what, and how it cannot just be that, yeah, like both parents go to work and then they come home at the end of the day, and what, dad sits on the couch and drinks a couple beers and mom mm-hmm. goes and does everything for the children in the house and the cooking? Like, no, 100% no, that cannot be. But
that's how most people are.
Yeah, like that's what we're coming from. We're trying to shift away from that too. There's so much happening right now. It's crazy. There's like so many different.
I know.
You know, just, I don't know, the way that I see it, because I think in pictures, because I think my brain's a little bit different from most people's brain. I don't know what that means about me necessarily, but it's like this swirling. It's like when people do those ink blots into a drop of water or into like a cup of water, like one drop of ink, and it swirls and it blends. But if you did like multiple different colors and they're all kind of like catching an edge where there's like a little bit of a purple and orange coming over here, and then there's the yellow and the red over there, and they're making some other kind of color, and da da da. And it's like there's just so much happening. And I think at the end of the day, the whole point of this is that we need to recognize that our overarching structures of society are not perfect. We're trying to move in the best directions that we can. Sometimes we overswing. There's benefits, there's pros and cons to all of it, but also just to recognize that it's not necessarily all good and that you don't have to fit into any one of these boxes either.
Right.
If this doesn't serve you, then okay, you know, and here's maybe just some explanation to offer or to inspire a different thought, or like, you know, a little kind of like experiment in your mind, a thought experiment of, consider in your own life or what you see in your society and with your friends and the people around you, do you think that any of this that we just talked about is affecting things? Do you see it coming into play in your own life, or do you see it on the news, or do you see it with celebrity culture, or do you see it with this, that, and the other thing? Because I do think it's really interesting to consider all of the different factors and how we ended up to where we are. And at the end of the day, we just have to make the best decision that's right for us and our family. But sometimes it can be helpful to understand why we might be feeling this certain way, or where things have, where they are because of how they used to be.
Yeah, I love that. And just to wrap up for me, like you mentioned, I think, you know, no one went to school and learned these concepts that we're talking about. No one's really talking about this because our society thrives on the extremes. So, you know, how do we find this happy medium? And for someone like me, just to give an example of knowing this, you know, I am a feminine essence, but I also have masculine components. I find a lot of fulfillment in a work life, but only one that allows me to be with my children most of the time. And so how can we carve out more options for women like me who want, or like you, who can kind of have the best of both worlds? We benefit from the feministic movement, but we are not hardcore feminists where we're like, you know, we don't want to be at home with our children. We do, but we also want to, you know, reap the benefits of having our intellectual, you know, world and work. And how can we create a better society? And how can we teach men that their inherent masculine nature is not bad? How do we teach them to be divine masculine and to step into more roles, like Wes mentioned in that podcast, of how do we teach men to be better men in this new society? And I think that that's needed more than anything. How do we empower women to not only be like men, but to be who they want to be, which could be any of the spectrums, right? Mm-hmm. You can go to work full time, you can be at home full time, or you can have a hybrid, and men can do the same. And how do you come together as a couple and find that that piece that works so that not one partner is bearing the majority of everything, and that there's this really like great partnership and connection and community that you create for yourself? And you and I have created that in our lives, so we know it's possible. It's just bringing it to the larger society and really giving people the chance to do what they want to do. And so, yeah, this is just like a thought-provoking episode about all of these concepts.
Hope that it wasn't, you know, I don't know. It would be interesting. Just let us know what you think. We're always open to more conversation, and, you know, we're both extremely active in our Instagram profiles, maybe me more than you, but
if you want a quick response, message Morgan.
Yeah, because I'd love to know what people thought. Like, do you agree? Do you disagree? Let's talk about it. Maybe we can kind of spur some conversation on the reel about this post or this episode too. So have a great day, everybody. Thank you for coming on and talking about that with us, Leah.
Thanks. In today's episode, we talk about some big concepts, one of which is the energetics of masculine and feminine. In the energetic world, when we are trying to conceive, there is a way to understand the feminine energy of fertility. And I've broken this down and taught you all about how to do that from a practical standpoint inside of my mini course, The Energetics of Fertility. If you want to learn how to have dietary, lifestyle, and natural medicine practices to optimize each of the four unique phases of your monthly cycle as a woman, then head to womanhoodwellness.com/mini courses to check out my Master Your Cycle mini course. Or if you or your partner are looking for ways to optimize his testosterone and sperm for optimal fertility, you can check out my other mini course, Strengthen Your Sperm, where I teach all of the practical dietary, lifestyle, and natural medicine things to improve testosterone, sperm, and fertility. All of my mini courses are available at womanhoodwellness.com/mini courses. So if you head there, you can see all of my course offerings, but those three in particular apply to this episode.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.